Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, don, da da da, what's woo, don, da da da, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world coloured with so many layers of fake, it resembles a German chocolate cake. A world where lies are packaged and sold as the truth, and not enough people bother asking for proof. A world where humans suffer from Stockholm Syndrome, while free thinkers set up shop at Trump's Thunderdome. And what will this world resemble in 2028? Whatever we make it. So, darlings, let's not rely on fate. Welcome back, Martini Heads! Huzzah, huzzah! It is lovely to be with you again. I raise my glass to you. You can't see me. I think I'm going to be doing this on video next time, but you can't see me, but I am raising my glass to you. And if you are joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Now, darlings, be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. We martini heads, we are simple folk. We believe in things like common sense, common courtesy, common decency. We believe America has a sacred purpose to unite mankind and lead the way to open the doors to the great awakening which will lead us into that new golden age. Our ideology, I would say, is broadly libertarian. We support Team Trump 100% in its fight to expose and dismantle the Luciferian ideology of one world government, also known as New World Order, also known as slavery for the masses and total control for one tiny handful of money laundering adrenochrome sipping pedophiles. To sum up, we come from many points of view, and we all met on the harmonious fields of MAGA, Make America Great Again. Many are former Democrats. We would say classical era Democrats when Camelot was a thing, just as many are Republicans, morphing into MAGA America First. Because I don't know what's up with the Republican Party, but it's not the Republican Party I used to know. And even more independents now, who lost their balance as the corruption was exposed. Now they're looking for someone who actually loves this country to lead it. And huzzah, because along came Trump and his team of reincarnated colonials, ready to take up their muskets once again in defense of life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. So I guess a martini head is someone in transition. We very much think along the lines of God without religion, and politics without partisan affiliations. So in that, I would say we are ahead of our time and on the path to self-realization. And well, that's our goal. And we do love scoring goals. And we also love cocktails. Oh, yes, we do. In fact, metaphysical martini is where the great spirit, the Holy Spirit, meets top shelf distilled spirits. And what a glorious combination that is. So, without further ado, let's take a sip of today's drinky poo and see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, my darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. It's a lovely golden color. And I lied, this is actually my third sip. And I'm going to have to say, that is just bloody marvelous. We're keeping that one. Yes. And staying on the subject of booze, I've had so many letters about, from people, we're all trying to get healthier and all of that, and I'm certainly one of those people. But it seems, I just can't win. Some people are angry with me because I'm asking people to drink less alcohol, or at least evaluate how much they drink and how it's affecting their health. And some are angry because I still drink any alcohol whatsoever. Listen up, my darlings. It's a free country. At least that's what we are fighting to retain. The word sovereignty, remember that word? If you want to drink three cocktails every night, if you want to drink 30 cocktails every night, no one is going to stop you. Go for it. Your liver won't be happy after a year or so. Your stomach lining will drop little hints like ulcers and severe indigestion and possibly bloody stool, that sort of thing. But no one is going to stop you. And we each have different levels of tolerance and different immune systems and all of that. I always end this show with a suggestion to drink just one and make it with the best ingredients you can afford. And that's what works for me. This is my show. This is what works for me. This is what I can speak on with authority. Also, I don't make a secret of the fact that I went through a phase or two or maybe three. In my life, when I drank far too much and my body rebelled. So I stopped drinking for a couple of years. And when I decided to drink again, I vowed to make it an occasional treat. And it works because my divine spirit inhabits my human and tells my human how much distilled spirit is appropriate. And that is always one cocktail or one beer or one glass of wine. That's what works for me. And that's pretty much probably once or twice, well, twice a month. So do your thing. I'm not judging you. Don't judge me. Do your thing. But you know what? I've just got to put it out there. Have some self-respect, though, right? And try not to kill yourself in the pursuit of the perfect cocktail. I have seen that done time and time again. I have lost, I'm sorry to say, far too many friends to liver disease, cirrhosis. One actually managed to get a transplant, but that doesn't guarantee that you're going to remain alive, by the way. It's a very difficult life after they replace your liver, so I am told. Anyway, not going to be a lecture. But just have some self-respect. And to the people who write in accusing me of promoting drinking, don't you people have lives? I mean, why are you tuning into a show titled Metaphysical Martini? Were you blessed with stupidity at birth? Or is it a skill set you developed over time? The title alludes to the content. I did not name this show The Tenets of the Teetotal, did I? I didn't call it The Scripture of Sobriety, did I? If you all are frightened by a little magical mixology, how will you cope when you meet the end of day's banshee? Woo, woo. And the end of day's banshee is the name of today's cocktail. A yours truly original from the legendary Phil Ward, who I believe resides in New York. It's quite delicious. And we'll talk about that more at the end of the show. He named it the Good Cork, which is a stupid name. So I renamed it the End of Days Banshee. All right, my darlings, as I said, blah, 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 blah. Welcome to the show. On today's show, we have Quack, questions, answers and comments, followed by a tiny pat of poetry, where I love terrorizing you with my original poetry for the new golden age. Some would debate that it's for the new golden age, but I think it's good enough for the new golden age. And once we're done with that, we will move on to awesome American civics and history, and we will end, as we always do, a little bit tiddly with the cocktail of the day. So let's get on with the show. Woohoo! Friends, friends, if you would like to share your thoughts with martini heads across the known universe, send your emails to me, arnie@arnieavedisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Arnie, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. And don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Omit Personal Details. All right, darlings, let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, 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 shaky. I'm shaking up the fishbowl. We had quite a few emails come in today, a couple of postcards as well. And we also had some voicemails come in that were less than complimentary. Just a word to the wise, if you're going to leave threats on a voicemail, police forensics have come a long way these days, and they can actually trace your call back. So one wonders why you would do that. Okay. Our first missive of the day is an email, and it's from Rohan in Exeter, United Kingdom. I did not know Rohan was a first name. I thought the Rohan were the horse people who lived north of Gondor in Middle Earth, you know, L-O-T-R. Lord of the Rings. What do I know? Okay, so Rohan asks, Dear Arnie, they are floating the idea of another pandemic, suggesting more vaccines and more masks and possible lockdowns. How should we respond? Rohan, we shall respond with 100% non-compliance. Look, the cabal is desperate. There is no plan B for them. They didn't think they would lose, even though the yellow box told them time and time again, an event will happen and God will reclaim the planet and all of that. But they don't have a plan C. I don't think they even have plan B. All they have is this depopulation through forced injection. And most of the world has finally woken up to the agenda. Now, they're going to try it over here, too, you know, in the USA. But with a few, you know, woke urban areas being the exception, it is not going to fly. Consciousness here has made a significant shift. It's not total. We still have morons. But it's not going to fly. Yeah, I refused to wear the mask through the COVID years. I didn't starve. I lost a great deal of business because I stuck to my principles. But, you know, life goes on. It always does. That is the only thing you can truly say about life, is that it goes on. We are eternal beings. Life never ends. Oh, my God. You know, that is a wonderful reason never to let yourself get stuck in a rut, because you start contemplating eternal life. And if you're in a bad place, that is not such a good thing. Rohan, my darling, do what the fabled horsemen who live north of Gondor would do. Be their namesake. Just say no. And keep saying no. And this time around, it will be easier because, you know, we have the dwarves on our side now and the elves came on board a while ago. And, you know, we're 5 years on. The ones who still fall for it, okay, so we know that they're truly lost. Because how can you not see through it at this stage of the game? The only thing to do is to give them the mockery and derision and the dismissiveness that they gave us. And this time we can pull it off, because believe it or not, albeit by a little tiny margin, we are now the majority. So thank you for that, Rohan, and happy horse people things that you do, and have a great life. Okay, let's take another one, and let's see. This is from Andrew, who lives in Stockton, California. I have driven through Stockton many times, never stopped, because I was always on my way to Fresno, you see. And anyway, Andrew in Stockton says, I don't see the deep state giving up anytime soon. Andrew, that is because they will never give up. That's why we have to take the long and windy road to wear them out. The alternative to the long and windy road to wear them out is the very short and brutal road to take them out, Godfather style. Pew, pew, pew. But there's thousands of them, so it would be a bloodbath, which is not good optics for the good guys. It would be effective, though. I mean, if you took out the top two tiers, would the others go into hiding? Because you're not going to get anything done with tiers three and four if tiers one and two can't manage things. Money has corrupted so many, and the deep state had deep pockets. You see, but then it knows that it knew it might run out of money one day. So it had to resort to blackmail. Because I assure you, I know how this works. Corrupt politicians, petty government officials, they get paybacks to push certain agendas, yes. But the bad guys need insurance. They have some sort of dirt, believe me, on every last corrupt official from the very top. Except nobody has been able to get anything on Trump. Isn't that something? But from the very top all the way down to, you know, little petty bureaucrat, they have something that's blackmailable on every single person. I wonder how it would go, though, if they did away with just the top two tiers. I wonder if three and four would fall. But you know what? At this point, I'd be happy to see just the top two tiers get arrested. And I know why it's taking so long, and, you know, I have no option but to be cool with it. But my gosh, we are all champing at the bit to see some arrests soon. What else do we have? What else do we have? Here is an email from Leo, who lives in the great state of Texas. And Leo says, Dear Ani, how do you overcome fear? And Leo writes many other things that I don't think are appropriate to share over the, you know, over the poddy. So I'll make this general. Leo, I'm not one for little band-aids and baby steps. I mean, sometimes that's the way we have to go. But if we could just shift the consciousness around the bigger picture, then, you know, really put on our big girl and boy panties, open our hearts and our minds and attune them to cosmic energies from all parts of the cosmos, I think that you would consider that quite a shortcut. Convince yourself that you are the creator of the thing which you fear. Convince yourself that you are the creator of the thing which you fear. Why would someone cower before their own creation? So I'm asking you to focus on your cosmic nature, to let the spirit fully inhabit the human. I'm asking you to let the primary vibe in your being reflect your true nature, which is divine, cosmic, unlimited, bursting with potential, eternal, infinite, magnificent. That's it. That's it, Leo. That's all there is to it. Master that, and you will never again experience fear. Fear is a coding error. We are supposed to experience a heightened state of awareness that alerts us of danger. That's not the same as fear. Our senses focusing in so we can make decisions pertinent to our survival is not fear, because fear freezes, and when one is frozen, one cannot move, let alone make a good decision. Fear is a sort of a software program, part of the alter ego, the false ego, the mindset that fills us with doubt and makes us engage in perpetual self-sabotage. It can be overwritten on the path to self-realization. Once we are self-aware, the ego loses power. I know it's difficult for a great many people who were taught that they were born in original sin and they have to jump through lots of hoops and also prophets to get to God. Ask yourself if you would give a human who acted that way the time of day. You go, my God, what a gaslighting narcissist piece of shit. And if you feel that way about a human who would behave that way, then that says a lot about how you have been indoctrinated to think about God. Thank you for that letter, Leo. And I have written you privately so that, you know, we talk about private matters. So that is in your inbox as of lunchtime today. Once we are self-aware, the ego loses power. What else came in today? Let's have a little shuffle, a little shuffle. This is from Morris in Austin, Texas. I understand that's the more boho, trendy end of Texas. Where do people do wear Stetsons, though? Or do you, if you live in Austin, does it mean that you sort of, you know, shun all things cowboy? I have no idea. I need to look into that. Anyway, Morris in Austin, Texas says, Dear Arnie, I have made several attempts at meditation, but I just can't settle down. Is there a type of meditation I can do that doesn't involve sitting still for long periods of time? I don't sleep well either. I am a wiggle worm. I have to keep moving. Morris, wow. It must be really difficult to be around you. There is actually, but before you try it, may I suggest adjusting the time of your meditations? Sometimes when we're trying to fit them into a lunch hour or, you know, something similar, we find ourselves unable to fully relax. So why not try, and you said you're not sleeping well, why not try a 12-minute deep breath meditation right after your evening shower? You'll be all relaxed and smelling nice, and you could even do it right before you go to sleep. You could go to bed and do the 12-minute, because you're going to sleep anyway, or try to, right? Do the 12-minute deep, deep diaphragm breathing, and that should help you get a good night's sleep. And it's fine if you fall asleep during the meditation. Try that first. And if that doesn't work, let me know. And we'll discuss walking meditation and washing the dishes meditation and doing up your shoelaces meditation and, you know, other more animated meditations for you. But you're not the only one. Many people have difficulty quieting down. And honestly, if you can cultivate being comfortable in silence for as little as 30 minutes a day, not actually thinking about anything, just letting your mind wander through the breath. In that silence, where you're just floating your thoughts away, breathing, floating your thoughts away, breathing. In that silence, you will hear whatever wisdom you need to hear from the universe. It is life-altering. Try it. Okay, moving on from meditations. Let's take another one. And this is from Amanda. And Amanda says, I was inspired by your weight loss and decided the time has come for me to shed the extra 95 pounds I managed to gain over the last few years. Good for you, Amanda. Huzzah. And she continues, my naturopath suggested the carnivore diet for my blood type. I know this is the one you follow, and I wonder if you could share your experience, the pros and the cons. Does the lack of variety bother you? How do you cope when you go out to eat with friends? How has it affected your cocktail consumption? Yes, well, these are all very good questions. Amanda, I am happy to share. First of all, I am very pleasantly surprised by the carnivore diet. And I would say I'm 95% strict carnivore for now, which means I eat whatever meat I like, fish, eggs, a little bit of sheep milk cheese. And the only thing I regularly cheat on is I have an apple every day because I need that. Somehow it makes my gallbladder very happy. So the weight loss was actually beyond my expectations, but even better were the health benefits. First off, I have negligible joint pain from inflammation. And, a year ago, I was so inflamed, we thought that the nodes under my arms, et cetera, might have a very serious condition. It just turned out they're inflammation. The other benefit is my digestive system is working properly once again. And that's amazing because that's been a while. And a small amount of meat and one egg, when you put that on a plate, say a 4 ounce filet mignon and one egg, you look at that and you think, oh my God, that's never going to fill you up. But believe me, it does because you're eating clean, you're burning clean, and you won't have hunger pangs for hours. I took my first day off this diet in 8 months last week. I had a donut and a piece of pie within 24 hours of each other. It did not go well. My stomach hurt, my head pounded, and I had joint pain. And the following day, I was uncharacteristically hungry. So I'm never going to do that again. I'm trying to find some contras for you here, some cons, but it's been nothing but positive for me. I can't find any cons. You learn to be a grown-up and you learn to control your cravings. But the good news is that they do eventually just go away. And once you give your body what it wants and needs to thrive, you'll look at pie and donuts as poison and not as treats. Believe me, your ego will fight you every step of the way. But you'll win because, you're a mature adult. And you asked about variety. There's plenty of variety within the meat spectrum. I eat beef is my favorite. I do eat some lamb. I eat salmon, cooked and smoked, tuna, cod, turkey, some cheese, some eggs, my cheat apple. I also do coffee and tea. Most strict carnivores don't, but I can't imagine a life without coffee and tea, and I'm not going to go there. My main piece of advice is this: avoid anything processed and buy the best quality meat you can afford. And if you have meat-eating friends, you might consider going in on a whole cow with them, and then buy a freezer. Because the carnivore diet, I'll just tell you, excuse me, I'm a little dry. Hold on. Oh, that's better. Me, 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 me. The carnivore diet, I have found, much to my chagrin, is not cheap. And the meats must be unprocessed. No sausages unless you make them yourself. Certainly no preserved hams or cold cuts. In fact, avoid pork unless you hunt your own wild boar. Because commercially processed pork vibrates to arthritis and no one needs that. But if you go out to Texas, they've got all these javelinas and these delicious wild boar, and they have a surplus of them. And I'm sure you can pick up kilos and kilos of bacon, and that will be a lot better for you than commercially processed pork. The one thing I have found is you will need to stay properly hydrated, and until your body adjusts, which happened quite quickly in my case. But until your body adjusts, I recommend a tablespoon of fiber once a day to keep things moving at the back end, you see. And in time, I will include vegetables back into my diet and a better variety of fruit. But for now, it's working so well, I do not want to mess with it. You also asked about social situations. What happens when I go out to eat with friends? Well, as Commander Spock once said, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. I go wherever my friends want to go. If they want to go to the spaghetti house, I go to the spaghetti house with them, and I'll have a small side salad or just some iced tea. I don't have to eat anything. I'm there for the company, and if there's something on the menu I want and can have without damaging myself, I will have it. But here's the thing. Once you start eating clean, you will look for excuses not to eat out because you know you can't trust the ingredients or the preparation. Being healthy, standing in your power, outweighs any desire to be part of any social scene. And as a carnivore, you can become the barbecue queen or king. Fire up that grill, invite friends over to your place, let them bring their preferred sides and desserts while you frame, you do your little flame broiling, your little heart out thing. Oh, yes, this could be your new thing. Carnivore worked for me. It did, and it changed my life. But of course, it won't work for vegetarians or vegans, so you have to talk to your nutritionist about options, blood type, health, all these things have to be taken into consideration. And you see, now I'm craving a nice ribeye slathered in Irish butter. And in days gone by, I would crave a giant donut with a pink glaze and sprinkles, or a nice piece of pie or cheesecake. But thank you, God, those days are gone. And I'm on the slim, trim, happy, and active path. Huzzah for that, huzzah. And I wish the same for you, Amanda. And you are welcome, my darling Amanda, to drop me a line as you embark on this journey. You might also just go to my website and consider signing up for my Ego Busters group. It's not necessarily just for people with addictions. It's for anybody with half a brain who's trying to live a functional life and be a better version of themselves. So just go to aniavedisian.com and click on Ego Busters. Let's take one more question from the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity. And this is from Omit Personal Details, who writes, "Dear almighty and ever so humble Arnie." Yeah, that's me. That's me in a parallel dimension. Anyway, I have a question for you. Does anything really matter? So what if the planet goes to hell? So what if we become a bunch of degenerates assaulting each other, insulting each other, and killing each other? In the greater scheme of things, what does it matter what we get up to? Well, Omit, that is a good question, actually. And here's my dime's worth on that. When we did the Big Bang and the strings of creation and all the multiple star systems, etc., I doubt we had much idea how it would all turn out. But we went for it anyway, because we are creative beings, created specifically to co-create with the thing we call source. We are hotwired for experience. The type of experience we have is guided by our sense of self-awareness, our inner awareness, because of course there is no such thing as outer awareness. Our minds and how we choose to operate them is the key to our reality. So let's keep it simple. Emotions are intel. They tell us how we feel about something as it happens. Our job as grown-ups is to process those emotions, to find out why we feel a certain way, and figure out how to bring balance and harmony to the situation. Harmony, noun, an orderly or pleasing combination of elements in a whole. A relationship in which various components exist together without destroying one another. A relationship characterized by a lack of conflict or by agreement, as of opinion or interest. But that doesn't necessarily mean 100% consensus has to be reached. It means we are processing and correcting together because we are on the same page. We have grasped the theme and are working together to make it work. The opposite of harmony includes terms like discord, disharmony, and conflict. These words describe a lack of agreement or a state of disarray. Those feelings are unsettling and lead to more confusion and more conflict. Why would anyone want that? What matters is harmony. As long as we are singing the same song, it matters not if you are a bass, a baritone, a tenor, a contralto, a lyrical mezzo, or a soaring soprano. All those notes and colors are needed, and together, when sung in harmony, co-creation can be spectacular. That's why it matters. To be given the opportunity to make all things from no thing. And where did we go with that? Where are we currently now? Do we really want to live in a world where our elected, quote, unquote, officials steal our tax dollars and funnel them into foreign accounts and then back into their private accounts? Do we really want to live in a world where villains are glorified and the honest and virtuous are ridiculed and harassed and prosecuted? Do we want to live in a world where elected officials advocate for murderers in foreign drug cartels while pissing on American citizens and pissing twice, once by stealing our money and twice by berating us for discovering their secret slush fund? Do we want to live in a world where people who should be hanged for crimes against humanity and treason are walking free? I don't. I want co-creation through harmony, not through dirty money and thuggery. That's why it matters. All things from seemingly no thing, a clean slate, bursting potential, and a whole cosmos that's ever expanding for us to do as we please in. And this is what we came up with? Oh, human race, I think you're asking the wrong questions. And that's where we leave it today for Quack. Questions, answers, and comments. Thanks to all the good peeps for writing in. Keep the letters coming, because that's why we started this show, to hear the news and the views from we, the people. And now it's time for a little sip of my drinky poo. Jolly good. Okay, that is nice. That is a winner, not a sinner, definitely. And now, my darlings, it is time for a little pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like nothing better than coming home, having a nice cup of tea or a small drinky poo, and sometimes both, and writing really bad but occasionally brilliant non-peer-reviewed poetry, because, my darlings, my poetry has no peer. It is in a class of its own, so here we go, with an original presentation by me, Ani Mad Shaman Avedisian, patriot, poet, extraordinaire, and all-around good egg. I haven't come up with a title for this one yet, but it is on my Substack, where it is titled, Don't You Think the Emphasis on Anti-Semitism is a Tad Excessive? Would you care to go down that rabbit hole? But that's a very long title, so I think I'll change it to something shorter when we do publish this. So here we go. You know, folks, people get very upset with me for so many different reasons. And I just want to let you all know, I don't give a toss. I'm a sovereign being. I speak as I please. I think as I please. I'm not here to be popular. I'm here to share what I know. If you don't want to know it, move on. But I hope at least I have lit a tiny little spark in your head that says, maybe the official narrative isn't correct. Here we go. Please do not read this if you are easily upset. Look away if the truth makes you sweat. Go back to bed if you believe legacy lies. Read something else, lest your psyche capsize. The question I ask is one no man has answered. It's safer, you see, to follow the standard, the narrative written to confuse and deceive, about the history and creation of that place, Tel Aviv. Since Semite refers to both Arabs and Jews, something was lost in and among all the clues. Why is it only the Jewish genocide that cannot be questioned, and those before and after hardly ever mentioned? It's time to put away the lies of so-called holy books and to stop walking on antiquity's tenterhooks. Take a good look at the history of the region. Who does it serve? Dig deep, and you have the reason. In the eyes of the divine, no one people are chosen above another. That's a social engineer's notion. Look closely into the makeup of that nation, and you will clearly see the faction that's deep faking. We have all been fed a crockpot of lies, slowly simmered and served up with fries. It's time for our history to be rearranged, for lies to cash in and the truth be exchanged. Should you find the courage to research this further, I guarantee you'll be filled with righteous fervor. Never again will you trust the mainstream, but first you'll engage in a long primal scream. There's an elephant in the room, a giant elephant in the room. The media used it to help them groom an audience addicted to doom and to gloom. Any day now, minds will go boom. I know that when we're young, we're little children. We go to school and we believe everything we're told and we believe what our parents tell us, etc. But, you know, now that we're older, I think we should have the courage to take a look at all the little things that didn't make sense. Like when I was young, I would question things in the Bible. I went to a Church of England school. And I would, you know, just say, if God is going to be all love and unconditional love and wonderful, but then is also dashing babies against rocks and killing the firstborn and doing wrathful, vengeful things, how do you balance this? What would Freud say, you know, about God's mental health condition? And I do understand, you know, and of course you got shot down for that every single time, but was my generation the last generation to be told critical thinking? Was my generation the last generation to actually be taught to analyze everything and question everything? I do not know. Well, do we have time for awesome American civics and history? Of course we do. So I thought long and hard for about 20 minutes this morning about what we would talk about. And generally, I like to include things that my American friends haven't heard of or have forgotten that they were taught years ago. So I thought today we would talk about the Virginia Plan and the New Jersey Plan, which were both drafted and presented at the Philadelphia Convention of 1787. So they were drafted, obviously, before the convention. And my information today comes from We the People, the Citizen and the Constitution, which is the Red Book, Level 2. So what is that all about? Let's take a look. What was the Virginia Plan? Well, before the Philadelphia Convention started, James Madison had drafted a plan for a national government, and he called it the Virginia Plan. And in essence, it proposed a strong national government. And under the Virginia Plan, two governments would govern the people. They would be individual state governments and the national government. Both state and national governments would get their power from the people, and this is what we now call a federal system. So the national government, under the Virginia Plan, would have the power to make and enforce its own laws, and it would have the power to collect its own taxes. The Virginia Plan divided the government into legislative, executive, and judicial branches. And the national legislature was to have two houses, representatives and the Senate. And the number of representatives in each house would be proportional. There was considerable debate in the convention about the different parts of the Virginia Plan. The part that created the biggest problem was representation. The larger states favored proportional representation in both houses of Congress. The small states opposed the idea. The smaller states said that unless they had an equal voice in Congress, the larger states would dominate them. By the middle of June, The debate about representation was no longer making progress. The delegates from the small states asked for more time to come up with an alternative to the Virginia plan. So William Paterson of New Jersey led the group of small states to develop a new plan for representation. Their plan was called the New Jersey Plan. The New Jersey Plan followed the framework of the Articles of Confederation, but it favored a weak national government. It called for only one House of Congress, and each state would have equal representation. In addition, under the New Jersey Plan, Congress would have the power to collect taxes on products and stamps, as well as to levy fines and collect money from the states if they refused to pay their taxes. Congress also would have the power to regulate trade among the states and with other nations. And the New Jersey Plan also proposed executive and judicial branches of government. Congress would appoint several persons to serve in the executive branch. The executive branch would appoint the members of a U.S. Supreme Court. That was the plan for the Jersey Plan. So the convention, of course, debated also the New Jersey Plan. But the framers saw that neither the Virginia Plan nor the New Jersey Plan solved the problem of representation. And the convention remained divided on this issue. Neither side was willing to accept the position of the other. Tension was growing. Ooh. And some of the delegates threatened to quit and go home. You don't really want that when you're, you know, you're a fledgling nation. But finally, the convention decided to appoint a special committee to try to solve the conflict. And one delegate from each state was asked to serve on that committee. And that's, I think, where we got the Great Compromise. And in essence, the Great Compromise has three parts. Congress would have two houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives. Membership in the House would be based on proportional representation. The House would have the power to develop all bills dealing with taxes and government spending. Membership in the Senate would be based on equal representation. At first, the Senate only had power to accept or reject bills related to taxes and spending passed in the House. This power was later modified to let the Senate make changes to bills involving taxes and spending, as developed in the House. So as with most compromises, each side received a little, each side gave up a little. The small states got equal representation in the Senate. The large states got proportional representation in the House. And also the House would have important powers related to taxing and spending. So the compromise meant that the large states would have slightly more influence over issues of taxes and spending. In the Senate, the smaller states could check the large states by changing or rejecting taxes and spending bills that passed in the House. And this Great Compromise, of course, was hotly debated. It finally passed by one vote. I think there's a better way of doing that. And I think I'm going to put my thoughts down on paper today, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to write to the White House. I'm going to write to Stephen Miller, because I think he'll read it, and tell him how I think both houses should be reworked. What do you think of that? Okay. So that was a little tidbit. You didn't know about the Virginia Plan. If you didn't know about the New Jersey Plan, it's very interesting. You know, I go to a great many secondhand bookshops and I buy these books that are written on American history very early on, very dated language, etc. And it's wonderful to get the perspective of people 100 years ago, 150 years ago, or people who wrote 200 years ago. And to get into the nitty-gritty of all the problems and the relationships that the founders and the framers and those who administrated got into in those early days. It makes me love America more, as if I could ever love this country more. But there we are. So that was it for American, awesome American civics and history. And my darlings, I think that's it for today's show. I'm about to finish my drink. Hold on. Mm. That is very tasty. I have finished my drink, and that always means the end of the show. I do hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I look forward to this time every other Wednesday to be with my peeps, my martini heads, and all your friends. Today's real-life cocktail was very much enjoyed by yours truly, and it's called the Good Cork, which is a terrible name, so I have renamed it the Call of the Wild Irish Banshee. And here's how you make it. You take 1 ounce of single pot still Irish whiskey. I use Writer's Tears. It's my favorite Irish whiskey, and it's under $60 a bottle. You take 1 ounce of mezcal. You don't have to use an expensive one. I happen to have on hand a Gracias a Dios Espadín Reposado, also under $60, as somebody actually bought that for me. Half an ounce of Benedictine, which is one of the greatest liqueurs ever created, and no home should be without it. 2 dashes of the Peychaud bitters, and it is different from the Angostura. Use the Peychaud bitters. Every household should have one Angostura and one Peychaud at their disposal. And then you want a garnish. They recommend an apple slice. I like a nice tart apple dipped in caramel and hardened as a dressing for this. So how you make it? You take the Irish whiskey, the mezcal, the Benedictine, and the bitters into your shaker with ice. I always use cracked ice. Don't give it a hard shake. Stir really fast and really well until it's well chilled. And then strain into a rocks, strain into a glass with rocks in it, nice fresh ice there, and then garnish it with an apple slice. As I say, I use a caramelized dip. It's getting to me, the drinky's getting to me. I use a caramelized dipped apple slice. And you can have this up, but it's actually better on the rocks. And remember, folks, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. Big thank you to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mysticalwares.com, online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Huzzah for Mystical Wares! Huzzah! I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, 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 mwah. Until we meet again, do not comply with New World Order directives. Stop lecturing people on subjects you know F all about. Study and understand the constitution of your country, and above all, know that all things are possible once we let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.